Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 321 for comics originally released on October 2nd, 2013. Starting us off in DC is Green Lantern number 24. This is part one of the Lights Out crossover storyline. There were a couple of things about this one, Drew, that kind of caught my eye and stuff. I mean, Robert Vivendi's been doing some stuff over at Valiant, doing some other stuff. He's a good writer, very solid, and I'm sure he's got a good game plan. But there was an aspect of the direction of this story that I think worked a little counter towards kind of my, I don't say my enjoyment of it, because I liked it fine. I thought it was actually a very good issue. But, I mean, the whole thing is Relic is trying to wipe out all the lantern cords of the different colors, right?
Right.
We know he really can't succeed in that, because, I mean, that completely pulled the rug out of, like, five ongoing titles of the New 52. So, okay, it's like, obviously they're going to have to stop him somehow, and we know the hero always wins or whatever, but this is more than the hero winning. I mean, they could do a big thing, shake up, you know, which Green Lanterns we're following or something like that, and big change or whatever. It comes down to, you know, how is he going to get defeated? How are the cores going to shape up afterwards? And, you know, this could be a great new jumping off point for this whole corner of the New 52, but it also seems like there's a certain amount of demolishing that needs to be done in order to clear room for rebuilding the franchise. That's fine and good, so long as what's being done is going to be better than what we've had so far. Time will tell if that'll be the case. Again, with Vivendi, I think there's a good chance that'll be the case. But it just seemed like I don't know if you read the Avengers disassembled stuff when Bendis first got on the Avenger titles ages ago.
No.
It was very much a, let's kind of, you know, knock everything down, blow stuff up, and everything will all be different. Eh, to a degree it was, to a degree it wasn't. There was aspects of that I was kind of feeling through all of this. Again, what we got was good, but it felt like a certain amount of step one, clear the stage, step two, rebuild.
Well, they've definitely cleared the stage. There's a major destruction here that it does, on the surface of it, not being a Green Lantern historian, but it seems like it's something you can't come back from. That there's a major piece that's going to be missing going forward that lends itself towards lanterns being lanterns. And, you know, there may have been some clues that I missed along the way, but it looks like it's a pretty serious plot thing that's occurred here during this comic. And
well, and another one that's being alluded to at the very end there.
Yeah.
Of this ain't nothing yet kind of a deal. So doesn't that make you have a hard time buying into the believability of this?
Like we've gone too far down the rabbit hole now to be able to fix this in any kind of realistic way.
I mean, either they have to kind of undo some stuff and put things back as that they've just blown up or, you know, destroyed or, you know, cleared off stage, which I don't think is one, the right thing to do or exactly what they're going to do, or they've got to build in a replacement of it's no longer this, it's now this. Which seems, that's the feeling I've got of where they're going to go, but it just seems like there are certain fundamentals of the Green Lantern mythos, the structure of the storytelling, you know, you can't get too far away from and still have it work. And they're teetering over the edge of that, and it makes it hard for me to think that either they'll go there and succeed or that they'll pull back at the last minute and it's all a cheat of some sort. I'm not going to say I know exactly where this is going and stuff, but it's like they've overplayed their hand.
Yeah, and what is the solution? We'll get a Deus Ex Machina solution at some point, and it'll leave you feeling empty, maybe. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the writer has in store, but, you know, that's possible that that's what's going to happen.
It seems hard for them to have a satisfying resolution to this. With some writers, I would say, no way can they do that. With Robert Vivendi, he's doing some great stuff elsewhere. He's talented. I think they can pull something out. It just seems like a more uphill battle, and hard for me to have anything but blind confidence in that.
Well, they did establish the bad guy as a strong foe. He seems more than capable of taking on the Green Lantern Corps. So they established that pretty well, that he is one tough customer.
Pretty well or too well?
Or too well. Perhaps they hit it just too fine a point on, put too fine a point on that, exactly. But yeah, you get the sense right away that this guy is pretty tough. And I like the Billy Tan art a lot. And I liked a lot of this story.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that's missing too for me is, I've been waiting since the new creative team and we were introduced to some of these new Lantern recruits, is to get a little bit more of these new recruits, a little bit more of their story and a little bit more of their personality. And they're just kind of window dressing, and we don't get much of them, of those characters. And I kind of was thinking that they were going to have more of a role by now.
I hadn't really thought about it when I was reading it, but I think that's a very good point. That, like you said, we've been introduced to half a dozen new recruits, new Lanterns, and they've had a few issues. And like you said, they're window dressing. They're props. They're not characters yet. That is a little disappointing.
And maybe they're part of the solution going forward. And I'm hoping I'm completely proven wrong, and that it's they were chosen for a reason. I mean, they alluded to that in that first issue that they were introduced in. And they were chosen for a reason, and we just don't know what that reason is yet. But it has
been almost almost comes down to the Deus Ex Machina thing of, oh, it's darkest before the dawn, and we just happen to recruit just the right people to get us through this.
Yeah, yeah.
Which would be a little convenient if that's the case. And again, I've got no idea. Maybe all my worries and stuff. Maybe I'm just being very pessimistic about this. Hopefully, I am. I'm looking forward to them really pulling out a great story and launching a new era for the Green Lantern and other colored cores. But between them overplaying their hand, like you said, the recruits being almost invisible, and Relic. I mean, I thought the Villain Month issue we got on Relic was really good, gave us some good insight into the character. But there was something about this issue he reminds me of Galactus. The last survivor of the previous incarnation of the universe. He's really big, very dangerous, treats people like insects. Of course, that may just be part and parcel of being really big and really powerful, which is part of why I think they may have, again, overplayed their hand of just how threatening, the guy is and such.
I did feel like they laid the groundwork for this story in the Villain Month title, and it transitioned very well into here. So there was a very quick ramp up into the story for me. I thought that really worked well and was a good companion piece for this.
I completely agree with you on that. It was one of, so far, granted we're just now getting into the aftermath of Villain Month, so it's too early to tell, but so far it's one of the best ones that, titles that has leveraged what they did with the villains.
Yeah, we were concerned about that. The few that even made the attempt, and how well that was going to be pulled off.
Well, and some of the other ones I've read this week, like Action Comics and whatnot, were seeming to be building on storylines that had gotten interrupted for the last 4 weeks because of the Villain Month such.
And that is unfortunate.
Yeah.
Really unfortunate timing, and probably couldn't be helped, but it would have been nice if, the timing could have worked out a little better.
Well, it seems like for one or two of those things, they had just started a storyline. And if they had, I don't want to say if they just put in some filler issues, but if they had something that could have filled in the gap, but been a solid, important issue, but not the start of a new arc or something, that might have helped.
Yeah, because I think Nightwing's going to go back to Chicago in his issue before, so that's really weird.
Well, it's one of those things where they're talking about those issues are taking place leading up to Forever Evil, and I'm kind of curious where this Lights Out story is kind of fitting with Forever Evil and stuff. On the one hand, it doesn't really matter. The story is able to stand alone on its own.
Right.
But on the other hand, if DC is playing that shared universe card, and with a major event like Forever Evil, the whole Villain Months and the whole kit and caboodle, they clearly are doing that. then it kind of does matter to some degree. Either you're having your cake or you're eating it too, kind of, you know, they're trying to have it both ways almost. So hopefully we'll see how things tie in together. I'm curious where things are going to go. As far as the big picture, don't know. One of the things I am expecting out of this Lights Out stuff is they're still going to have their powers, their rings, etc. But charging them is going to be much harder, much more rationed, and you're going to have the ubiquitous power will be gone, if you know what I mean. There'll be more drama based on, well, I've got to do it before my ring runs out, because maybe it's on for a day, off for a day, or I don't know what. But the whole conservation of power aspect that seems to be getting set up here makes me think.
Yeah, they would have to address that for at least an issue.
I expect that to be part of the status quo going on after this.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we'll see. The whole concept of the lights out and the power outage, just in the name, implies the free ride is over, so to speak, on some of that.
Yeah, I like the art. The writing is pretty solid, and this was fun. This was a fun read. I think your points though make a lot of sense long term. Where's this going to go? But for this issue, I guess I've got to go with a 3. But it's a solid 3, an enjoyable 3.
For me, I'm somewhere between a high 3 and a low 4.
Yeah.
I think
definitely see that.
You know, in terms of this particular issue, what they did was good. I just think they're setting the bar too high, and the threat almost unbelievably so. And it's like, well, if he's really this big, this bad, and done this much already, how can these cores survive?
Yeah.
Yet they're not going to cancel 5 or 6 titles. This is not going to happen, particularly higher selling titles. So there's a certain, can they really pull this off or not? And I'm hoping they can, but I'm uncertain. And again, your point on the new recruits having been kind of brought on stage and then quickly ignored for all intents and purposes is a little disappointing. I think this could be a strong start to a new era of the Green Lantern stuff once all of Lights Out is out and we've read it. I think this is a good start for that, but it's got me more suspicious than optimistic, I guess. We'll see.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah, let's do that.
Thunderbolts number 16. Now, have you been reading this title?
Never.
Okay. Let me start with a few things then, just to give you some context for this. Basically, General Thunderbolt Ross, the Red Hulk, has assembled a new team, and basically promised each of them, you join this team, you help me out, I'll let you pick a mission. Now, interesting negotiating tactic, even more so when some of the members are Elektra, the Punisher, Deadpool. It's like, okay, that's kind of odd that you want to say, oh, well, we'll do whatever you want at some point. And this is the first time he's really actually doing that, and the Punisher's picking this mission. And, of course, he wants to take out the guys behind the mobsters, you know, the elite, I guess, or whatever.
Yeah, unfortunately, up to this point, yeah, he hasn't been able to get to them.
Yeah. Something where he needs some serious Hulk-level muscle and so forth, like extra manpower, other than just mowing down the regular mobsters he usually mows down. You know, and the whole concept of the Punisher needing backup is a little odd in terms of just scary, crazy, or whatever. The other thing that I think is worth pointing out is this Hefte Palo, the artist, not the regular artist.
Ah, okay. That was my major beef.
Yeah. I open this and it's like, wow, the art style has changed. This is more of an Humberto Ramos sort of a style than a, I'm trying to remember, blanking off the top of my head of who the artist is. Thinking it's Dylan, but I could be wrong on that. But you see how the art is on that previously on page with that nice, crisp, very clean line work?
Yeah.
That's the regular artist.
Yeah, and that's not too bad.
That's great stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, the change in the art style set this off on a little bit of a bad foot for me, because it's a little more exaggerated and cartoony than I tend to care for. It was good art, just not in the style that the book usually has. And I think reading this in a trade paperback collection eventually, it could really throw some people when they hit that page turn or whatever and say, whoa, what happened? But I thought the story was good. It was entertaining. The whole concept of the Punisher picking the mission is fun, and an alien invasion getting in the way, that's kind of cool too. I thought they overplayed the Punisher's kind of OCD on fighting the mobsters just a little, but overall it was fun. What do you think?
Art really threw me. It didn't seem to, for me, it didn't seem to line up with the tone of the book, but it, I didn't know. I thought, well, this is 16 issues in, so obviously this is the tone of the book and this is the art style, so that's what they like. So that's good news that this isn't the normal art style, because I didn't think this worked at all for the story they were trying to tell. It was kind of like the Adult Swim stuff, that sort of animation style, and really, really blocky animation. And yeah, didn't care for it. I like some of the writing. I thought the Deadpool stuff was pretty clever, and he works best for me in very small doses. So that character was just in a few panels and worked, and then that was it.
They've been doing a good job in this title of keeping Deadpool as Deadpool, but not overplaying it.
Yeah.
So I think people who are enjoying his solo book would still find him accessible and the same character here. It's just not from his vantage point, and he's, again, a member of an ensemble versus the star of the book.
But all in all, I didn't care for it. And if this was the regular creative team, I would probably not return. But I might give it another shot just to see what it looks like with the normal artist on it. Because I do like Charles Soule's writing. He's done a lot lately, and I've liked most of it. So, there was some good stuff in here. All in all, this is a 2 for me.
I can see that. I can see that. I think if it had had the regular artist, for me, this would have been a 3, or I mean a 4 or whatever, but since it didn't, I gotta kind of knock it down a little. I don't think the art fit the book's style as well as it could have. I don't think the art was either as well inked or as well done as it could have been. There were aspects of it where it just felt, particularly in places, heavy on the inking, other places heavy on the exaggerated cartoony style. I think this was a fun issue. I liked it, but it's also clearly the middle chapter of an arc. And I think people such as yourself that are not getting the book on a regular basis and you just pick this up for the, either in this case to review, but in other cases the Infinity crossover or whatever, I certainly don't know that they'd be satisfied with the quality of the Infinity crossover part of the issue, nor do I think it would have hooked new readers. And to me, that's a major missed opportunity for something like this. You want to put your best foot forward. You want to have your A game here when you're doing a tie-in to a line-wide event like Infinity, or even if it's not line-wide, whatever. You're going to have more readers coming in because of the way they marketed it. You want to do whatever you can to up the odds of them coming back. I didn't feel they really did that in this issue.
And we just had the first issue of that Punisher miniseries, the 2-issue miniseries, and got that Punisher. And then to look at this Punisher over here, it was a totally different Punisher, too. It was kind of startling.
Well, yeah. In the other book, The Trial of the Punisher, he had clearly a plan. We don't know what it is, but he had one. Smart guy, thinking whatever. Here, he's almost borderline, totally obsessed with must kill the mobsters, must do whatever I can to kill the mobsters, and almost a parody of himself, but not quite. They towed that line. That was the one thing about the writing. I think if they had toned that down a little, and if we'd gotten more of the Punisher that we got in that other book, that would have worked better on this title. But, again, like you said, Charles Soule is frankly having a really great month or two right now. I think a lot of people have been happy with the work he's done on the Villain Month's issues. They've been very good issues. He did a good job here. This may be a bit of a turning point for his career. Hopefully it is. Again, he's doing good work. Shall we move on to our other book for the week?
What did you give this?
Oh, I gave this a 3 out of 5.
Okay, you gave it a 3. Okay.
If it'd been the regular artist, might have given it the 4.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the cleaner artwork both clicks better with me, and frankly, I think it would have done better for the story.
Yeah, and that intro page, the art on that intro page, I liked.
I'm pretty sure Steve Dillon was the regular artist. I was just looking through the Marvel previews for a couple of months out. He's not listed there, so he may be off the book, and they may be getting other artists. So we'll see how that does for how the book sells.
Okay.
Because I think he was part of the draw for the book. Pardon the pun. So. Now, shall we go on to the other book?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Let's go.
No, it's okay. It's good. Fair question. Sometimes I forget to give the rating. I think I did this time, but anyways. Elephant Man number 51. This is the first part of a new story arc. Have you ever read Elephant Man before?
No. Nope. Never. This is my first one.
All right. I got on the book late in the game. It was one that I'd seen the booth at Con, knew about the thing, the comic and such, just hadn't really gotten into it. Finally decided to, and frankly really enjoy it. And it's one of those where some of their arcs can go like 9 issues. Sometimes it's a little slow coming out or whatever, but it's hard to find good jumping on points. I think we lucked out and got a really good issue to review here. I think Axel Medellin did a brilliant job on the art. Nice, clean stuff. Very well done. I think it was a really good story, and I think it was a good jumping on issue. What were your thoughts on all of that?
I never even seen this one before, so this was a really pleasant surprise, and just the whole cover design is just beautiful. I love the cover. And the way they kind of played around with it to make it look like a number one issue,
mm-hmm.
So it was incredibly clever. And I'm not sure Richard Starkings and Axel Medellin, the artist.
I may be mispronouncing the name, so say it how you wish. And if we're mispronouncing it, I apologize to the artist.
It's great stuff. You know, I hadn't read the first 50, so you would think you'd be at a loss, but this is a great read. It's pretty to look at. You get up to speed really quickly on why there are elephants in this world, why there are elephant men in this world, and it's fine. You know, it was explained away quickly in a panel or two, and I moved on. You know, you would think that would be something that would be nonsensical, but it's easy to accept and move on because the writing is so strong, and they have a lot of personality. These characters have a lot of personality. They work really well together. They work really well apart. I don't know much about this world that's been built, but I'm very excited about it. And this is an issue to watch for me, or a comic to watch for me in the future. And I'll definitely be continuing on this one.
That's good to hear. This was one that I wanted to be doing just because, again, I love the book. I think it's fun. The concept is fairly unique out there. The basic idea of Elephant Men is it's in a world where they were fighting a war, and it's you know, 100, 200 years in the future, whatever. Not that really society's changed that much, but in that war, they genetically engineered soldiers based on animal DNA. So you have these anthropomorphic elephants, rhinos, giraffes, zebras, all kinds of stuff. The war ended. The surviving soldiers have been kind of integrated into society. And what we have here is kind of a hard-boiled private eye kind of a story. You know, that whole sci-fi thing kind of thrown in. So to me, the closest analogy I could think of that I think most people would be familiar with is the Alien Nation movie and TV show. Just think of the good parts, where it's, you know, a cop story with aliens, but replace the aliens with these big elephant men instead. And I think this issue just did a wonderful job on accessibility, and really the only thing I think you needed to know coming into this story . It was kind of the basic concept of, you know, what are these elephant men? Where did they come from? And they've got a, you know, one paragraph, kind of a almost like a dictionary entry or whatever, caption on one of these pages early on that's, oh, that's what that is. Okay, I got it. Everything else you can kind of pick up as the story runs along. So I was very pleased with that. Again, great art, great story. You know, I think this is how jumping on issues should be. And I'm very pleased they did such a good one.
I guess our kind of our main transgenic creature is a hippo, isn't he? I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Hippo, and, hip flask.
Yeah, hip flask. Page 10 has a panel that is 3/4 of Hip Flask's face. And then over the top of the bridge of his nose is the action in the background with some of the word balloons. And I stared at that panel for a while. It was just so well designed, and the art was just amazing. And it's filled with stuff like that. There's so many great artistic touches to this, and the story is really good and brings you into this world. There's tons to like, and you know, there might be a plot hole here or there towards the end that, you know, might get solved down the road. But I just liked so much about this, and it was so new for me that I have to give this a 5.
I can totally see that. I agree with you completely. To me, this is a definite 5 out of 5. There are a couple of pages that just really show off what this creative team is capable of doing. There's one page in there, a couple of pages before the staple, where Hip Flask is in the room looking around with the flashlight like cops do.
Yeah.
And the other guy flips the light on. And just the coloring difference between those two panels and stuff.
Uh-huh, I'm looking at that. Yeah.
It was just so smoothly done. The effect of the flashlight, the room lighting up, all those things. You know, it was the attention to detail on some of this stuff.
And the page before where he has the flashlight in front of his nose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you see the gradients and the light reflecting off the front of his nose and then off the floor out of his hand. That he's holding in the panel below. That's sophisticated art, man. It's really, really nice stuff.
And the layout of the apartment they're going through and stuff seems very grounded and solid and consistent. You know, it's kind of the polar opposite of the kind of the joke about Rob Liefeld's art where, you know, you're in a room for 10 minutes or 10 panels and the door is switched to every surface, you know, available across those different panels. Just because he can't draw it consistently or whatever. And that's harsh. He's not that bad. But I was, again, very, very impressed with this. Once I tried out the title, I got hooked. I've, again, got the whole run. Totally recommend it. They do trades and stuff like that as well. They do hardcovers. They also do multiple covers. So if you do decide to go get the back issues, pay attention to the issue numbers. It's easy to kind of buy duplicates as well. It doesn't look like a cover you've seen.
Sounds like somebody's been burned.
Yes. Well, they tend to do flip covers.
Oh, okay.
And they're nice covers. They're beautiful covers. Again, getting a really good artist and stuff is something the book is known for, and they rotate through different artists and such. But again, as much as I like the different covers and stuff, having, you know, knowing what issue it is and stuff a little easier sometimes, nice.
It is nice if the issue number is on there.
Yeah.
I like that in my covers.
Well, and like you said with this one, where they did the 51 looking like a number 1, you know, if I wasn't paying attention and just flipping through back issues in a hurry at a con or something, I could totally mess up and think this was the number 1 and then see it and say, oh, jeez, I should have known better.
But that does tell the new reader, hey, this is a jumping on point.
Yes.
Or the dumb reader, hey, this is the first issue.
It claims to be a number 1, and in many respects, it effectively is.
Yeah. Now, the human character, does he exist in the previous 50?
No.
Or is it just Hip Flask?
Hip Flask, a couple others, but the other guy is new.
Okay, that's great.
At least I don't recall ever having seen him before. And typically they're really good about putting in footnotes on when things have been referenced before and stuff like that. The other thing worth pointing out, just more as trivia than anything else, is Richard Starkings is the guy behind Comics Craft, the lettering company.
Okay.
So if you're looking for new fonts and stuff for your own comic or whatever, or information on how to do lettering for comics or whatever, it's worth checking out his website and stuff over at Comic Craft. So fun
and
stuff.
And you have the print version, I'm assuming.
Yes.
I have the digital. Does it have the next 5 covers in the back?
It has an also available. It's got on sale now. Yeah, actually, it does. It has.
They continue that, putting the 5 within the number sign. So PAC 52, 53, 54, and 55. So you kind of see that this, it's at least a 5-issue story arc, I'm thinking.
Yeah, it is a 5-issue arc.
Yeah, so That's cool. I'm in. Thanks for picking this one, because this was another one of those Image hidden gems that I had no idea about.
Image has a lot of them. Some are harder to spot than others, just because either the frequency they come out with, or however many of other titles Image has.
Or it's called Elephant Men, and it has an elephant on the cover.
Yeah, but and you're thinking, how good could this possibly be?
How good could brilliant. This really be?
That's to me, that's the big challenge with comics these days, is it's so hard to effectively market them and get the right books in front of the right people, that I think there are a lot of things out there people will just love, but never know to go try it.
And because there's so much out there, it takes very little for you to decide, no, it's not for me. It doesn't, yeah. You know, it takes more to opt in than it does to opt out. So it'd be a challenge to launch a new comic.
Well, and that's even if somebody's actively considering the book.
Yeah.
It's even easier for somebody to just miss it in the crowd. So, yeah, Elephant Men is one that is well worth supporting, and it took me way too long to get on the book myself. So I'm glad I'm on it, and I'm glad you liked it.
Did you go back and do single issues or trades to catch up? Or
single issues. I had decided I wanted to get on board with it because I heard great stuff about the art, the writing and such. And it took a while to assemble the collection of the issues. They're not hard to find, but there was one or two that were a little harder to find than others. And then once I got them, I just read through them.
Nice.
So what else did you read this week that was good?
Oh, Forever Evil number 2. I liked that a lot. I was just psyched about that after Villain Month. So this issue was jammed full of twists and turns. I liked a whole bunch of it. Art wasn't that great, but it didn't take me too far out of the story. Mm-hmm. I thought it's like the Teen Titans all looked kind of Asian to me.
Yeah, I think the art could have and frankly I think should have been better, but I think part of it is these are not, you know, the shortest of issues either. I think mm-hmm. they're longer than normal, right? Or am I just
29 pages, I think,
so those ones, 28, size 20. And a half.
Yeah
I think that's eating into the time and causing a little bit of a crunch there.
And David Finch, isn't he usually it's Brian Hitch that's usually slow.
But there are more than one that are usually slow. Hitch, though, his style, I don't think, lends itself to a book that's got so many characters in it.
Yeah.
Granted, I think few artists have a style that really lend themselves to that. You know, George Perez, Sergio Aragonés in a completely different style, but able to fill that many characters in a page and stuff like that. It takes a certain gift or whatever to not only be a really great artist, but to be able to handle that many different costumes, that many different characters, have them look how they should, but not look alike, and things like that.
Oh, it's a difficult job. I mean, there are some pages that are, you know, there might have 6-7 panels and 20 different characters mm-hmm. there. And, you know, how can you have a full grasp of all of those characters and be able to, like you said, crank this out in a reasonable time frame?
Well, yeah, I mean, just the reference material alone of, wait, now what are the details on this guy's costume look like again? Oh, yeah. Okay, got it. Okay, let me draw that. No, what about that one again? You know, it's a tough job. And I think, you know, Hitch is doing a good job. But I do think, like you said, there are a couple of pages where, in a perfect world, he would have had more time, or maybe he's perfectly happy with the work. I have no idea. But you know what I mean? Might have been able to do a little bit better or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I guess there was so much in this issue. I thought there was a lot going on, but at one point Atomica goes into, I think, is it Wonder Girl's mouth,
mm-hmm.
and then pops back out. Did she do anything in there, or is it just? It wasn't really clear to me. What
there were a few parts of the storytelling that I think could have and should have been a little bit, I don't want to say more explicit, but a little clearer as to what was going on. Because I couldn't tell what she was trying to do or what she actually did. I thought she was going to attack from the inside or something, but that didn't seem to pan out.
And then we have Power Ring's hand kind of shriveling and dying. And that wasn't doing that in the previous issue, was it?
I was getting the impression that having the Power Ring was either some kind of addictive or viral sort of a thing and was basically going to kill him.
Okay.
But no, they hadn't done that before. That there was no sign of that in the previous issue or in the Justice League one. At least none that I recall.
So there's some great reveals through here. I can't really talk about too many of them without ruining the surprise. And there's a lot of fun in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And if you enjoyed the first issue at all, you've got to continue because it's a blast.
Yeah, I think it's definitely must read for anyone really following the DC universe, and it's good stuff.
This is another one. I read Detective 24, and it kind of jumped back to the Wrath storyline, which was mm-hmm. unfortunate because, you know, it just didn't feel. It felt like eons since that story was introduced to us, and then to go back to it was hard. It was kind of jarring. Although it was pretty well done, but
why didn't he get a villain month issue?
That would have been perfect because you could have transitioned directly into it, and they just missed the boat on that one.
I mean, with Action Comics, we get the Psycho Pirate. Why didn't he get a villain month issue?
Yeah,
you know, we got a number of issues that were really, really good issues for villain month. But it was here's out of the blue a brand new character, a new villain, somebody who hadn't introduced, or something that's got no launch point from anything we've told so far. Good, great, solid, done in one issue, and then who knows if it'll ever pick up anywhere ever again. I mean, presumably it will, but compared to stories where we've got characters that have already been introduced but not really fleshed out and are in the middle of a storyline right now, it seems more topical to handle those characters. And missed opportunities, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and it was a pretty solid story too. Mm-hmm. And but to have that break for Villain Month and like you said, not have a transitional Villain Month issue to kickstart it, it doesn't make sense. And it really was a kind of a slow on ramp to get back up to speed after that time off. Yeah. Lost a lot of momentum. Lazarus 4 though, the Greg Rucka, Michael Lark book mm-hmm. is, man, this is just a great world he's building. Loving everything about it. And we got a lot more good stuff in this one too. A lot of intrigue and backstabbing, and you know, then Rucka gave us a little treat with a lot more reveal of how we got to where we are in the world politically, and that stuff was just fantastic.
That's the stuff in the letters page.
Yeah.
Yeah. I need to go back through the last couple issues and really kind of dig into that stuff. Because that's additional material, and you're right. There's a lot of world building there. And I like how in the actual illustrated story itself, we're getting the world building, but it's not let's stop the story for it.
Yeah.
So using the margins of the letter page that way, I think it's just a brilliant move. The coloring on those tend to make it a little hard for me to read because it's like a yellow on white sometimes or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they could have executed the printing of that a little better, but I think the concept is a great idea.
And I mean, the part of that backstory is, you know, it's kind of referring to the 2000 election and how close it was, and you know, a nation divided, and how close we were to. This country could have been towards going down the same path that this world went down.
Mm-hmm.
And it lays the groundwork very believably that, you know, we chose peaceable transfer of power over, no, my guy won, and I'm going to take to the streets because my guy won and I want him as the president. And it makes a very compelling case that, how close we were, and it's really good fiction.
Yeah, Rucka is a very, very talented writer, and when he really kind of thinks something through, and he usually does, you wind up with something that's just a very believable world, a very well thought out, logical, sensible, natural feeling kind of a progression of things, both in terms of just big picture stuff and, you know, how Gotham Central worked, how Wonder Woman's embassy worked, and things like that. Why she had the embassy for Wonder Woman, stuff like that. He's a very brilliant writer. It's unfortunate he's not happy with the state of DC and not doing stuff there, because I think the work he's done on those characters is great, and I'm glad he's branching out, doing his own thing, and, you know, having some success with that.
Oh, he's not alone, unfortunately. There seems to be a lot of creators that are feeling that same way.
Can't say that I blame them. You know, as much as I like the corporate characters and stuff like that, it's because they're cool characters, not because of who owns them. And it's usually because they're cool characters because of who's written them and who's drawn them. And if you've got the talent and can do your own characters, your own genre, your own, you know, properties, whatever, why the hell wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that eventually is going to be, I don't say the downfall of Marvel and DC, but certainly a long-term weakness for them. I don't care how good your intellectual property library is if you don't have people who can execute on it well. And they've got people at both companies right now who are doing a brilliant job on that. But they too could say, hey, wait a sec, you're making how much money on these movies? And it's based on stuff I'm writing, so if I had just written it with a different character, I'd be raking in that money? Kind of hard to argue with that logic.
Yeah, and who was the creator that that created Harley Quinn? And
then, Bruce Timm.
And yeah, and then that character just takes off, gets kind of taken away from him, and, you know, is, you know, in a lot of books and a lot of properties, and he just kind of doesn't get anything out of that, except for pride, I guess, of ownership, or pride of creation.
I think frustration of ownership would be the way to put it.
Yeah.
The interviews, and I've seen one or two video ones of him on this. He's very much, it was, you know, work for hire. Literally, it's not like they've ripped him off or anything, but he's frustrated by the fact if it was a wildly successful character in terms of adding something to the Batman mythos, which up until that point really had been ages since it happened. And it kind of, the impression I got was it really turned him off from doing anything as creative, as innovative, with company-owned properties, because he doesn't get a piece of the pie.
And you would think that that would be a warning sign for all creators, and most of them probably do have that in the back of their mind, that I have this idea, but I'm going to save it from my book.
I would think it's less a warning sign to creators than property owners. If I were at Marvel, DC, or one of these other companies, and I wanted to entice people to come play in that playground, you need to give them a financial incentive, or at least not the disincentive to go take those same ideas and go tell them at an image book or somewhere else creator-owned.
Well, that's what is amazing about Scott Snyder in the Court of Owls. You know, he creates this whole new world within a world that we already had, all these characters. And that, unless he got a piece of that, it spun off to its own book. Down the road, that could be huge.
Did he originate the Court of Owls, or did he just kind of popularize them, and weren't they created prior to him getting on the book? I'm trying to remember.
I'm giving him credit then. I didn't. I thought that was his creation.
I was thinking it was Morrison, Grant Morrison.
Okay.
In either case, it wasn't the corporate structure of DC that created the Court of Owls.
Right.
Some person did. And that, too, is one of the few things that's been a major addition to the mythos. Whether it's got the long-term legs and stuff and longevity that Harley Quinn does, far too early to tell. Because, I mean, that character's been around for 2-3 decades now and still very popular.
Yeah, yeah. Daredevil Dark Knights number 5 finished up the Latham storyline, the 2-issue storyline. That cover looks a lot like a Samnee cover. And at first glance, I thought, wow, that's really, really close to the Mark Waid book, you know, in its look. And that might be by design, but I thought this was a really good finish to that story. And
that's good to hear. I need to go pick it up. I apparently forgot to pre-order it.
What?
I must have goofed that month on the order. I had realized that a week or two back. Sent TCBS an email, but it was too late. It was back ordered at the distributor at that point. So I need to go either pick it up off mycomicshop.com or actually go head to one of the local stores this weekend.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked the way it finished up, and I'm psyched for the next 3 to see how this mini finishes up. I still think you're right, though. It probably would have worked better with a break in between 3 separate mini series.
Yeah. Space it out. Get the bumps from the number 1 or something like that. I think people are going to be confused when they get to the 4th issue and it's starting a new story. What's up with that? you know, or whichever issues they were.
Then I've read the Marvel Knights Spider-Man number one, the Matt Kent miniseries. And this was trippy.
Trippy's a good word for that. Yes.
Way out there. I'm not saying I didn't like it. I liked a lot about it. I thought it was super inventive. Some of the panel layouts were just incredibly creative. A little hard to follow in places, but it's a Peter Parker design, character design that I've never seen. He doesn't look like you would think he would look, but it's still well done art. It's really out there. The art style goes through a bunch of different stages, kind of. And sometimes there's various stages of art, various types of art styles on the same page. So it's different. I don't know. What was your thought on that, on the art in this?
Anytime a book is described as different, way out there, trippy.
not going to be for you.
I found it okay.
Yeah.
But it's not in my sweet spot. It's not one of those where it's just, wow, I love this. I don't hate it or anything, but it's one of those where as the art style keeps morphing or whatever, and it's going all over the place, it's more work sometimes to dig the story out of it than I care for. Again, there's an audience for that, that again would just eat that up with a spoon and just say, wow, it's brilliant. And I don't say that they are wrong. I don't say I disagree with them. I'm saying I don't have that opinion of it.
Yeah, I saw some, you know, Sandman style art in this, very reminiscent of that in places.
Yeah,
it was reminiscent of a lot of styles in places. So, it's tough to pin down. And the story was good, but not great. So to have to struggle to dig it out of there, I don't know that you're going to be rewarded. And you know, there are some struggling. Some places where you would struggle because all the panels are flipped mirrored. So you have to really struggle to read it. Kind of like Trillium. This month's Trillium was this week's Trillium was very difficult to read. They had a lot of inverted pages and you had to flip back and forth.
I read comics for entertainment, not intellectual exercise.
Yeah. And just too much of a challenge. But there was a lot of good stuff in this. Now, when you add all the good things up, does it equal great? Probably not. I think I'm going to stick around for another issue, though, and see if what the next thing looks like. I don't know if I'll do the whole five, but I definitely want to read one more.
That makes sense.
And then Superior Foes of Spider-Man. I think we've talked about this before, but this is fast becoming one of my favorite couple of comics that Marvel's putting out. This was another great issue.
It was. And they're doing some good stuff with these characters. They're continuing to show them as I don't say losers, but definitely underdogs. We'll go with underdogs. And really fleshing those characters out in a way that villains just can't get fleshed out as the threat of the month or whatever, or threat of the half-year story arc that they normally show up as. So it's an unusual book because villain leads typically are hard sells, which is ironic to say the week after Villain Month just ended, but you know what I mean. but they're doing a great job with this, and it's a kind of a book that you need villains in, because I don't think you could do the same sort of a thing with heroes. We expect the villains to lose. We want our heroes to win. And again, the characters they're doing, some of the stuff they're doing is a lot of fun. The way the issue ended was kind of surprising to me with what was going on with one or two of the characters there. I want to see what the ramifications of that is, and I am confident there will be some. I'm very much enjoying that book. I think a lot of what they're doing, both with that book, Superior Spider-Man itself, and a bunch of other stuff, Marvel's done some really good stuff in terms of I'm going to credit editorial for picking the right creative teams on the right books, telling the right kinds of stories, and making sure that they're well told and well executed.
Yeah, there's a lot of home runs over on the Marvel side right now, and that kind of tips the scale if you're if you're comparing apples and apples.
Well, apples and oranges. Marvel and DC are fundamentally different, and both of those are just playing a different game than most of the other publishers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's not necessarily that one is better than the other. It's just, at this point, Marvel's really gotten its act together on a lot of titles and is doing some great stuff. DC, they're rotating some creative teams. Again, we just got a relaunch, essentially, of the Green Lantern franchise over the last few months. They've paused stuff for Villains Month and Forever Evil, so it's still a transition period at times for DC, and I don't think they've gotten the editorial synchronicity or synergy that at times I see over at Marvel. So, you know, we'll see how stuff goes.
Yeah, it's all cyclical anyway. Okay. The Star Wars number 2.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like this one as well as I liked the first one, but really? I still liked it. It's different, and when R2 started talking,
that
it just about dropped my book. I thought, "Holy smokes. I didn't see that coming at all." And it if you didn't think before that this is a different Star Wars, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
R2 talks. I hope that's not a spoiler. I guess it is. Uh-oh. You have to cut me out.
I don't know if it's a spoiler or if R2 talking is a spoiler.
Yeah.
Knowing, versus saying. That one kind of threw me. It's like, yeah, this is a very different world, a very different take on it. I'm still really enjoying it and wanting to see how it plays out. I would find it very entertaining in kind of a humorous sense if... eventually, this got turned into an animated feature.
Yeah, I could see that.
I mean, I wouldn't go for a whole live-action movie or something on it, but it would be interesting to see it play out on the screen. We'll see if they do that or not. I'm enjoying it, though.
A lot of good stuff this week, though. Another solid week.
Yeah, I read a couple that were a lot of fun. I'm still really enjoying the Battle of the Atom stuff. All-new X-Men number 17 this time around. Really kind of moved that storyline forward in some cool directions. It's one of those where they are, in some cases, zigging and zagging, and just every issue has brought something new to it, to the storyline, moved it forward, and hasn't felt like just filler or we have to force this group of characters to be involved or something like that. It's, for my money, one of the better X-Men crossover kind of storylines they've done in ages. A lot of fun. Another thing they're doing that I'm liking at Marvel is the Phantom X Max series. It's good series, I'm enjoying it, but it's definitely behind the times in terms of continuity. This is Phantom X kind of before one of the last kind of major turning points for that character, which surprised me, disappointed me a little, but it's still a very good read. And then the other one that I really enjoyed the issue was Batwing number 24. Fun stuff, good character. I think if they had launched Batwing with Lucas Fox as the lead character, and this take, it might have done much better than it did. As it is, retooling, swapping out the character, going the direction they're going, too little too late. I think people have given up on the book. I'm surprised the thing is still being published.
Yeah, it's 2 years in, and I don't know. I dip in and out just to see, and, it's not bad, but it doesn't do a lot to move the needle.
It's interesting, though, because it's not the new 52 title that I would say has undergone the most radical transformation. I think that's Green Arrow.
Ah.
You look at the first issue of that, which was a bright, sunny, colorful, middle of the day kind of in terms of daylight superhero upbeat sort of a thing. Now it's all moody, it's all dark, it's all in shadows. They're pulling in a lot of things from the TV show.
And Lemire took over around 18.
Yeah, and that was when these changes started.
Mm-hmm. And he's just writing, though. He's not doing the art, is he?
Correct.
All right, okay.
And these aren't bad changes. I get why they're making them, but it's just such a juxtaposition. If you were to take the current issue and the first issue and kind of lay them side by side, these are the same series, same character? It's a little surprising. But, the TV show is working well for them. It would be foolish for them not to both leverage that and get the comic more in sync with that, because it would do them no good to have a hit TV show in terms of comic sales if people go to the comic and, well, this is nothing like the show. Why would I read this?
Yeah. And now they have two choices.
So, yeah.
Now, Earth 2, the Earth 216 was the final James Robinson issue. How did he go out?
He went out okay.
Okay.
Not great. This title is still still got some problems. The plot has, I think, unraveled a bit. And it was right around the time of the annual. They introduced Batman. They introduced a few other characters, and they really haven't shown up. They haven't come into play. And it's kind of a let's focus on this for an issue, this for an issue, that for an issue. And now they're trying to tie it all together and stuff. I think they can recover the momentum, but I think they're in a point where Tom Taylor's going to have to do that. I think he's perfectly capable of doing it too. So I'm looking forward to that. But I am not the least bit upset that they're having a creative team change. That answer the question?
Yeah, that's cool. I think I'll read this one just to kind of see how he ends it up, and then to see the difference between his style and Tom Taylor's on 17. See how that transition goes. I'm kind of interested in seeing that.
That makes sense. Not a bad plan.
Now I read Batman Black and White number one. You know, I liked a little bit of it, not a lot of it, but I'm curious about number two.
I'm finding it to be having the same issues that most anthologies have.
Yeah.
That there's some stuff in there that really works for me. Some of it really kind of doesn't. I like that they're doing the title, but it's one of those that right now, if they were to say, oh, it's going to be ongoing, I wouldn't go past what I've already pre-ordered.
Mm-hmm.
Again, some of the stuff they did, the lead story, the art by J.G. Jones was just brilliant, great stuff. I liked seeing that in black and white. I didn't think Dan Didio's writing was that great. But, I mean, we've talked about his writing before. The Raphael Grandpa stuff was, frankly, a more exaggerated art style than I tend to care for. It was also very heavy with line work, and things kind of got lost in the chaos at times. Batman's cape in particular, just you had flowing lines of black and white and stuff like that. It just didn't totally work for me. So I think it's the kind of thing that it's gonna work great for some people as a title, not so much for others. And that may even be on an issue by issue basis, given the different artists and creators they have every issue.
Yeah. Yeah. Did this have kind of a message woven throughout the stories? Like on issue one, it was all about kind of social injustice and that sort of 99%, 1% type of thing that was kind of woven throughout there. Was this connected in that way?
I didn't really think so. I'm not going to say it wasn't. I'm going to say if it was, it was lost on me.
Okay. Yeah, you couldn't miss it in the first issue, so.
Yeah.
That's good.
I'll be honest, though, some of the art styles kicked me out of the story enough that there very well could have been a strong theme in there that I was just oblivious to as I was, all right, next artist.
How did Brian Wood end Mara? Did it turn out okay? Solid last issue. It was long delayed, I know.
It was long delayed. I think the point of the story that Brian Wood was telling on that was lost on me. I liked the issue. I didn't think it really necessarily wrapped stuff up great, and I'm not entirely sure kind of what the point of the story was, if that's even a valid comment or question, if you know what I mean. It was entertaining, but I didn't see the total through line of the plot or whatever. And again, part of that may have just been I read a lot, and it took a while to get the story out.
Yeah, the delay could not have helped momentum, story momentum on that at all.
I mean, again, individual issues I by and large liked, and the art was great in that stuff. Just kind of not sure where he was going with it. Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that'll do it.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Superman Wonder Woman number 1 from DC, Captain America 12 from Marvel, and Triple Helix number 1 from IDW. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.